So I've tried Atkins, South Beach, Diet Pills, Nutrisystem, Weight Watchers. Yeah, that's pretty much it.
This hour, fad diets, how they catch on and the damage they can do. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. People have done a lot of crazy things over the years to lose weight. You probably remember the grapefruit diet, the cabbage soup diet, the baby food diet, and we don't even want to talk about mail order tapeworms. This hour, we will talk about how diets come and go and the most recent trends with three registered dietitians. We also want to hear from you. What fad diets have you tried? Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. The weight loss industry in the United States pulls in more than $60 billion a year. And that doesn't count do-it-yourself diets. Many of us are serial dieters and have tried a lot of different things over the years.
Name any diet pill. I've probably tried that. Don't know what it's called, but I believe it's either honey. It might be syrup of some sort, cayenne pepper, lemons, and water, and you drink it for 48 hours.
I started fad dieting like as early as 12 years old and kind of in the middle of dance competition season, and it's continued throughout life. So I've tried Atkins, South Beach, Diet Pills, Nutrisystem, Weight Watchers. Yeah, that's pretty much it.
I joined Weight Watchers once a number of years ago, and that's about the closest I've come.
I think fad dieting is ridiculous.
I think that it doesn't usually lead to long-term weight loss, and most of the people that I see who are on fad diets see quick results, and they're quite unhappy while they're dieting because it's not a sustainable way to live.
My mom was always kind of a fad dieter, and I kind of saw how there can be a yo-yo with that, and so I've always kind of stayed away from it.
I've done them where I cut out all sugars, only natural sugars. I've done just fruits and vegetables. And I try and just always watch my sodium intake.
Those comments were collected in Iowa City by our producer, Julia Davis. And this hour, we're going to talk about fad diets and where we get our health information. We also want to hear about your experiences. You can call us at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And with me today, I have three dietitians. Joanne Daler Miller is University of Iowa Student Health and Wellness Dietitian. Hello, Joanne.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here. Sue Clarahan is a registered dietitian in Iowa City with her own nutrition consulting practice. Hello, Sue.
Morning.
And Ann Cundiff is a registered dietitian at Hy-Vee in Des Moines. Hello, Ann.
Hello.
Thank you so much for being here today. And we heard a lot of, in that collection of voices, we heard a lot of names of different diets. And if you look through lists of fad diets over the years, you know, we've got the grapefruit diet and the cabbage soup diet and all of these different cleanses. The baby food diet was popular just a few years ago. In your practice, and Sue, why don't I let you start? I mean, how many of these things have you seen come and go over the years?
My practice works a lot with eating disorders and disordered eating. And the genesis of every eating disorder, one of the things they have in common is dieting. Regardless of the type of eating disorder, someone will begin. So I have seen everything in the book. I've even had people take tarantula extract to help them. So, and these things go back, well over a century. They're the same thing cycled. And if you use logic and common sense, if diets work, shouldn't that be an industry that has literally phased itself out? But according, even in a recent study in the Journal of Obesity, the greatest indicator of overweight and high BMIs is dieting. So when a person says, I'm going to go on a diet, I think I'm going to lose weight, the question should be, actually, how much weight do you want to gain?
Because after they lose the weight, they will gain it right back?
Sure. It's very unsustainable. We all have this great genetic makeup where 80% of our weight, where we're going to land on this beautiful bell-shaped curve of body sizes, is determined by genetics. And if I have a neutral body, but I want to be a thin body and my genetics say neutral, I can diet down to thin, but my body's going to do everything it can to get back to that neutral body. And so it fights. And then once it gets back, it protects itself by kind of setting the set point a little higher. So when I do lose weight again, unsustainable genetically, it's not where I'm supposed to live. My body's not efficient there, and it fights as hard as it can to get back up to that point. But each time, it's going to set itself up a little higher. And it's not unusual for us to hear, oh, my God, if I only, when I was 20, I thought I was fat, and I wasn't fat. And look at me now, and now I'm 40, and I'm 100 pounds heavier. It's that chronic dieting is the best indicator of weight gain later in life.
With the diets that come and go and become popular. And, you know, I think back to my childhood, and not just the ones that get advertised on television or in magazines, but of course there are the books that get written about diets. And then there are the do-it-yourself diets that get passed word of mouth. They used to get passed word of mouth from person to person. And now, of course, you can see it all over the internet. And do you see these cycles coming? Do you start to hear people asking about a certain thing and then you get a tidal wave of people asking?
Absolutely. Working in a community that's surrounded by a Hy-Vee or just a grocery store, it's kind of like if some one person did it, how did you do it? I want to do it. And therefore, what do I need to do? Write it down. I'll do it verbatim and I will go into the store and I'll buy exactly what you ate and I will try to lose the weight like you did. So it's very, very common to see that happening just within local communities of people that are interested in weight loss.
Are you sometimes surprised by some of these diet trends that stick around for a very long time or seem to come back around again?
I'm always shocked just because, you know, I'm not old and I'm not young. I'm kind of in between. And I think about high school and when my mom was doing maybe a diet and it's now coming back around and I'm seeing it in younger and younger people that are trying to accomplish these same goals through these fad diets.
And Joanne, do you work primarily with students at the University of Iowa?
Yes, I do.
So with younger people, how do you see these trends? I mean, are they the same as with older people?
It seems to be. A fair number of students where they hear about diets are from their mothers. So they'll say, well, over winter break, my mother and I decided to go on this diet together, or my mother was following this diet, so I chose to follow it as well. And so, of course, they're following what they're doing. But also, I mean, I see a lot of the word of mouth types of things too. So there'll be several roommates that are following the same diet or several women in the same sorority. They're all doing the same type of diet.
And what brings them to you?
Gosh, various things. I do see a fair number of students with eating disorders. So those ones who the dieting has kind of gone over the edge, and gone into disordered eating, I'll see them. But sometimes students have enough sense that, well, and other people as well, but my services are free to students, so they'll decide that maybe this isn't the healthiest thing, so they'll come in to talk to me and find out really what's a healthier way to do it or to check in and see if it's healthy. And I think that is the advantage of offering free services, that they can do that and there's no risk.
Right, right. Well, and when they come into the store and they want to buy whatever they've seen somebody else buying or heard that someone else has eaten and bought, I mean, do you have an opportunity to talk about the nutritional value of different diets?
Absolutely. It's a great time to have that talking point with those individuals. And I don't pry too much into their personal information, but I do kind of ask some prompting questions of, you know, what kind of diet are you doing? Is this something that you've done before? Are you trying something new? And I kind of just ask them some questions. And then we start kind of getting sidetracked and we start talking about just healthy eating in general. So it's a great opportunity as a dietitian to have that platform to talk about maybe deferring them from doing this type of diet.
Now, these diets do seem to come in waves. They catch on. And It's funny, you were talking earlier, Sue, about lack of success with a lot of these diets because there usually isn't a long-term success associated with these diets. Why do they spread so quickly if people aren't being successful with them?
Social media spreads it. Advertising, they're very highly effective. And we've really lost track that humans have a natural diversity of body sizes. And since 1972, when Ansel Keys took the Quinlet Index and made it the body mass index, we've gone from understanding that there's people that are healthy and thin, neutral, and fat bodies, that it's across all spectrum, that we now have this, I actually call it a very Hitler-esque notion of health, that you have to be between a 19 and a 24 to be healthy, when there's no basis for that. And since it's been since 1972, it's really ingrained now. But you see a movement of people saying, this just doesn't work. It doesn't make sense. And when I work in my practice, I personally believe it's unethical to give someone a diet. We really work on, let's look at enhancing your health practices. And with those health practices, some health practices are going to be very weight neutral. For some of my clients, I hope improved health practices will cause weight gain. And then I have clients that with improved health practices, they may lose weight. So I look at, let's look at what are your health, what habits do you do to maintain your health? And our bodies tend to naturally land where they're supposed to be. But it's been, again, when Ansel Keys developed, kind of stole the body mass index in 1972, it's gotten completely screwy. And we need to get back to understanding that beautiful acceptance of diversity of body sizes.
Well, and there may have been an explosion at that point, but I was looking at information about diets over the years, and many, many fad diets occurred before 1972. So, I mean, clearly this is something that humans are drawn to.
Right, but it was even before, but since 1972, there's been an abnormal desire to put bodies where they're not supposed to be. Before that, it's always, and part of dieting in my world is it's usually for something else, and it's usually some emotional or some type of that type of issue, and we need to fix the brain and the emotions and not the body. And, you know, if I can fix fat, I can run more, I can eat less, I can do that, but maybe I can't fix feeling helpless or overwhelmed. And so I'll work on fixing myself so I don't need to worry about those things, to work on those things.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. Pardon me. With me today, I have Sue Clarahan, a registered dietitian in Iowa City with her own nutrition consulting practice, and Kundiff, registered dietitian at Hy-Vee in Des Moines, and Joanne Daler-Miller, University of Iowa student health and wellness dietitian. We're talking about dieting this hour on Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about fad diets, how they come and go, why they catch on, and the damage that they can do. With me this hour, I have three dietitians. I have Joanne Daler-Miller, University of Iowa student health and wellness dietitian, Ann Kundiff, registered dietitian at Hy-Vee in Des Moines, Sue Clarahan, registered dietitian in Iowa City, who also has her own nutrition consulting practice. We also want to hear from you this hour. Have you been one of those people who's tried a lot of different fad diets? What have you learned from your experiences? Has someone in your life been a serial dieter? What have you learned from their experiences? Feel free to join the conversation, 866-780-9100, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And before the break, Sue, you were talking about how we have this unrealistic idea of what all bodies should look like, that we have this ideal, and we all think that we can become that ideal, and that's one of the reasons that these fad diets catch on so much. And Joanne, I want to ask you, I mean, when students come to you, and I know that both of you do a lot of work with eating disorders and disordered eating, talking to someone about the fact that, you know, maybe it's okay to have the body that you have, how do you have that conversation?
It really depends. I mean, some students are more open to it, but a lot of times I just start out talking about what their past experiences are with dieting, what's kind of the lowest weight they've been and when was that, what are their family size like, and just trying to kind of get them to look at, gosh, what is your maybe genetic makeup and what's realistic for you? So that's usually a good starting point. I did also want to comment, though, on the impact of social media and kind of our current goals to be thinner, because I think social media has been a huge impact on that as well. We have so many images out there that make young women think that they should be thinner than they are. The majority of images that we see are thinner than most people can be. So I think that does have a huge impact as well. So it's no wonder that these young women want to be that size, because that's what we see all the time.
Well, and Sue, you and I have talked about eating disorders on this program before, and the disconnect between reality and what someone sees in a mirror can be so amazing. I mean, how long does it take to help someone understand what they actually look like?
It takes quite a while. And it also, as Joanne said, how she begins to explore that, I really like to begin to explore also with people how their body systems work. You know, people don't understand that food is fuel and it makes my body work. They just think your heart beats, it just happens, and you breathe and it just happens. But all of those things take fuel. So I work on developing an appreciation for what the body actually does and provides to them. And it's difficult, because every advertisement, regardless of what it is, tells us we would be better if. I want him to go back to that joyful two-year-old that runs around and giggles and laughs and just totally love themselves. That's how we were born. And it gets very difficult when you are shamed because your genetics are a certain size, or you never see an image that's not Photoshopped, so you have unrealistic expectations. So it is working at, what does this physical being do for you? And then the question, if you're not going to live in your body, where are you going to live? And we don't take care of things we don't like. And if I don't like myself, I'm constantly going to punish myself in areas of dieting and not listening to myself. So it's that appreciation of what this physical being does and offers to me on a daily basis, along with what Joanne said. Let's look at our background. Let's look at our genetics and education.
Yep. Talking about the whole Photoshopping and how those images aren't real is also helpful.
You know, we in that collection of voices that we heard at the beginning of the show, we only heard women's voices. And our producer, Julia Davis, approached a lot of different people, and none of the men that she approached would say that they had been on a diet, although I know that many men in our culture do diet. And I'm curious, Anne, when people come to you at Hy-Vee, what's the breakdown, would you say, gender-wise?
I would say about 80% is women, but a good 20% are men. So I do currently work with quite a few men that yo-yo diet and that have tried different diets and are just trying to learn how to they tend to want to get away more from the fad diets than women do. They're not looking for the quick fix. They're just looking at what's going to give them the best results in the long run. So that's my experience with them. And so men tend to be a little bit easier to work with when it comes to teaching them the right way to eat. And they're more into the long-term effects of just eating a balanced, good diet and not trying to do a lot of fad diets.
Anne, how about Joanne, how about with you? What do you see with the gender breakdown with students in the university coming to you?
I would say it's a little higher than 20%, but again, I'm seeing people not just for weight loss, for lots of different reasons. But I guess one of the things I see is that men don't have quite the same idea of being thin. I oftentimes will have men that have a BMI that is technically in the overweight range, and they are fine with that. Sometimes they want to reduce their body fat, but they don't necessarily care about changing that number, the weight. And then again, I guess the more concerning thing I see with men is that they want to be bulked up and they have more of an emphasis on being less fat and being lean and then choosing inappropriate diets for those reasons.
Right.
But with them, it's less about weight loss and less about calories.
And you do, Sue, with your practice, you do see a number of men who have disordered eating. I mean, eating disorders are not strictly for women, but again, they do affect women in a higher percentage.
I think men, what they perceive is dieting, it's a lot of the fad diets, but I would say many, many men have very disordered eating. It may not be an eating disorders, but they eat more for the purpose of reshaping their body instead of nourishing or taking care of their body, nourishing or taking care. With eating disorders, goodness, of the 30 million people that haven't, there's 10 million men, and there's probably more because of the shame and stigma. Men have tremendous disordered eating. I see several males, and one of my concerns that I see, what, you know, Joanna said, when does dieting go off the deep edge? Part of what I see is when people strive to be healthy, they begin to limit their intake of all foods. There's a term called orthorexia. It's not a legitimate diagnosis, but in essence, it's restricting under the guise of healthy eating, and you see tremendous amount of damage done where someone is down to eating, you know, I just do rice, and now I have rice and coconut water, and I might have some beans, and that's really develops into an eating disorder.
And is that getting to be more common? It has a name now, so we have a name to put on it, or is that something you've seen?
It is, you'll probably go too, Joanne, it is becoming more common. And part of that is that we have taken away, we're telling people that they cannot trust their bodies. They cannot trust their hunger and fullness cues. And they can't trust these 10,000 sensors, which we call taste buds, which are so intricately intertwined with what my body needs. And we tell people that this isn't good and this is bad and this is good. And so they don't trust themselves. Whereas if we would begin to look at and trust our bodies, the hunger and fullness cues again, research after research study shows, intuitive eating shows that 80% of the time we eat a wide variety of foods that are very nutrient dense and take care of the body. And that gives us 20% of the time for those fun and entertainment foods, because eating has that such social aspect also. But we're taking away that internal wisdom of people by trying to tell them how they're supposed to eat or what they're supposed to eat. We need to work on quit telling them what to eat and teach them how, you know, I often say our tongue is not a calculator. It's not a scale. It doesn't know grams. It doesn't know this. It knows, you know, temperature and texture, and it knows flavor. And we need to get back to knowing that and trusting that, because these bodies of ours work unbelievably well. They're very tightly wound to have that happen. And we have to quit telling what to eat, but we need to teach people how to eat and, you know, to trust that internal wisdom. But when you said about the dieting industry, goodness gracious, if people trusted themselves, who would profit? No one profits by them. And there's a great statistic, Marilyn Wan did it in her book Fatso, that we could build a Habitat for Humanity home for every homeless person in America with what Americans spend on weight loss, which means what we don't trust ourselves with. So we need to get back to that internal wisdom. I teach a lot of hunger, fullness, and what are the true characteristics of food, not what they should eat.
We're talking about diets this hour on Talk of Iowa. With me, I have Sue Clarahan, registered dietitian in Iowa City, has her own nutrition consulting practice, Ann Kunduff, a registered dietitian at Hy-Vee in Des Moines, and Joanne Daler-Miller, University of Iowa student health and wellness dietitian. You can join the conversation at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Steve is on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Steve.
Hi, good morning.
What's your experience?
Well, to hear somebody else finally reiterate exactly what I have unfortunately demonstrated. You call it yo-yo, I call it the reverse roller coaster. I'll say that I've lost over 7,000 pounds. Unfortunately, I've gained about 7,500. I'm morbidly obese, weigh about 440. And I've been, the whole retinue, I was a fat baby and a fat boy and fat kid and always husky clothes, and mom taking me to an endocrinologist when I was a kid, and I'd go on a fast, and after the first day or two you're not hungry, and then a couple of weeks, and unfortunately I've learned that you lose protein, not fat, and as soon as it comes off, then it unfortunately weight gain is about three times the rate of weight loss. And I figure I've really kind of figured out addictive behavior, and cigarettes taught me. I quit 20 years ago, and I've quit four times, and come to the, I don't want to ever quit again. Unfortunately, we can't get to that with food, and they, it's gotten to the point now where I'm fearful of, I don't want to go on a diet, because I know full well, if I lose 10, I'm going to gain 15. And I've been through all, the grapefruit diet, the Atkins diet, and actually lived in an intentional community in Hawaii. And, interesting philosophy. I call it instinctive eating. Nothing cooked, and, only eat one food at a time, like every other animal. Only eat one food at a time and eat that until some trigger says to stop. Also, a lot of fruits and vegetables, but also raw, a lot of it was no seasoning and no cooked food.
Yeah.
Which sounds, kind of.
Steve, sounds extreme. Like you've been through everything.
I've been through everything, kind of been everywhere. And my niece, at her wedding, I wanted to cry, seeing this fat overflowing out of her wedding gown, and just got news that, she's come to visit and don't say anything about her weight because, she's lost weight and she sent, it's like, well, I really, I'd like to impart some wisdom of not just you look great, but beware that. Another thing I think is very interesting. At one point in Hawaii, I had Gabriel Cousins came. I was working at a resort and he came on this juice diet and everybody's read his books and, worshiping this guy, and I was working there, so I got to kind of go on the diet, and sure enough, lost several pounds, and I probably lost 60 or 70 pounds, and got into my car, and raised my arm. I remember the moment, and I put my arm down on the window ledge, and felt that there wasn't the fat there, and it kind of hit the bone, and it was like that moment, I hit the trough, and started putting the weight back on again. And I've gotten to where my clothes were, beyond falling off me.
Right.
And yet, here I am. I have a hard time turning over in bed. And, it's my long story, but, 61 years old, and, it's, I think, kind of unfortunate situation. Diets. I've got one boss here at work who's been, lost a lot of weight and stuck with his low-carb diet. And to see pictures of him as a little corpulent squirrel with the puffy cheeks. And, he's one of the rare few that have managed to keep it off.
Right.
And all of the Biggest Loser. Look at every one of the Biggest Loser contestants a year later.
Well,
I think is really the telling.
Steve. Steve, thank you so much for sharing your experiences with us. It sounds like it's been a really, really tough road. And Sue, let me ask you, Steve's experiences are sort of at the extreme end of that bell curve. But I'm sure that you've dealt with people who, who've had very similar experiences.
Sure, and his experience actually isn't extreme. A lot of people go through what he has. And that's why we need to go away from the weight-based paradigm of healthcare to a health-centered paradigm. And health-centered is I begin to eat based on what my body, my taste buds, you know, relearning that hunger and fullness. And with the dieting, we lose those hunger and fullness cues, but they're buried. They're always there, and it's like learning a new language. We begin to move because these bodies like to move. But we also, when you look at health, it engages in emotional, social, environmental. We need to look at all of those components of health. And, you know, that mental health aspect is so important because the oppression of people in bigger body sizes, the weight stigma, all of that affects our health also. So we need to look at those health-based factors instead of weight-based.
Well, and Steve was talking about seeing people who have been successful at weight loss, and there are, you know, people who've had really significant success at weight loss. Is there, and we're going to need to take a short break here, but is there one specific thing that those people have in common? Is it rate of weight loss?
I see people that still live a very disordered life. To maintain that weight loss, we would consider them having an eating disorder if we really looked at them. It's only, 2% that will keep the weight off, so it's very small. But you'll hear people say, well, I make sure I get in 90 minutes of exercise every day, and I don't eat this, and I don't eat that, and I don't do that.
Right, so, we'll talk more about that in a moment. We're going to take a short break. We're talking about dieting, weight loss this hour on Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about fad diets, yo-yo dieting, and we'd love to hear from you this hour. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me, Joanne Daler Miller, University of Iowa Student Health and Wellness Dietitian and Cundiff Registered Dietitian at Hy-Vee in Des Moines, and Sue Clarahan, Registered Dietitian in Iowa City with her own nutrition consulting practice. And I'm not sure which one of you would like to take this, but after listening to Steve's story and his experience, there are a lot of people who've had similar experiences and don't know where to turn. How does someone like him get help in coming up with a healthy diet that he can sustain and will help him reach some of his health goals?
I would say find a dietitian. I mean, most communities do have dietitians, and I think dietitians are in touch, most of them, with healthy eating. I mean, we're all hearing this now. But on the other hand, if you go to a dietitian who prescribes a diet for you, you need to recognize that maybe this isn't a good fit and look for someone else. But I mean, I guess I'll throw this to Anne. Hy-Vee's, I think that's an awesome resource that they have dietitians available, but most local hospitals do. There's dietitians in private practice. You can go to the website eatright.org and find a dietitian in your local area that offers a search option on that website.
Well, and Anne, I'll let you weigh in on that as well, because when we use this term diet, modifying your diet doesn't necessarily mean you're going on a diet, right?
Absolutely. And I agree. A dietitian is the way to go. There is a difference between dietitians and nutritionists, which I always like to tell people that there is a difference. And seeking out that registered dietitian is so important. And that's why Hy-Vee employs registered dietitians to actually provide what that person needs when it comes to an individual nutrition just plan. It doesn't mean that you're going to go on a diet. It just means we're going to find what works for you. And Hy-Vee is a great resource. Absolutely. We do have dietitians present there in almost all of our stores, but they're everywhere. They're in hospitals, they're in clinics. We're all over the state. There's over 800 dietitians in the state of Iowa. So if you can't find one, we've got a problem, because we are all over. And that's one of the biggest messages, is seeking out that nutrition professional, that expert that can help you navigate your health and wellness journey.
Well, and Joanne, you were talking about the fact that your services are free to students at the University of Iowa. There are people who can't afford to pay for a dietitian. So where are the resources for people who can't?
Sue? There are plenty of resources out there, especially with, again, we see a lot of binge eating. The Binge Eating Disorder Association, BETAOnline.com, has a tremendous amount of resources. The Association for Size, Diversity, and Health has a lot of resources for the weight science and what is there. There are also the National Eating Disorder Association has resources available. The Eating Disorder Coalition of Iowa, on our webpage, we have a tremendous amount of links and resources to get. One of the important things, though, is to do a little bit of digging when you look up those resources. What are those persons' credentials? What is their philosophy? You know, and if weight loss pops right up and we want weight loss, again, it fails 97% of the time. So we want to engage things that improve our health behaviors, not continue on that same vicious cycle that people have been on. There are dietitians that do classes that are free, that do talks, several in private practice, do a sliding scale fee. So there are resources out there. It's just asking, and again, to recognize that anybody in the world can call themselves a nutritionist. That's why there's so many out there. But those credentials of really how the body works and operates, that's where our expertise comes in. It always frightens me that you have my neighbor around the corner, down the friend's aunt is selling this product and it works great, but I don't trust my doctor. I don't trust my dietitian. So we really need to look at that.
Well, and I want to talk more about where we get our information about nutrition, but let's go back to the phones. Dina is on the road today. Hi, Dina.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
How do you feel about, my question was, do you know anything about isogenic? I am a senior. I just graduated from MPTI in Colorado, and I'm a certified personal trainer now. And I always tell people I'm not a physician and I'm not a dietitian. I have to stay within my scope of practice, and we've taught specific things. But how do you feel about isogenic, or do you know anything about, you know, what I should say? I know you know. What do you know about isogenic, and is that a healthy regimen for a person?
Okay. Is it a plan, a supplement plan, or a diet plan?
It is, I don't really call it a diet plan. You basically you take vitamins, shakes, and then
that's a diet plan.
Okay. Well, and I don't like diet plans because I don't like diets. I don't even like that word. I think you're dead in the water before you ever start.
Okay, and this is, let's get our dietitians to respond to this. I mean, we certainly don't want to push a product today, but it's also, there are a lot of these diets that get sold under the umbrella of the cleanse, the idea of a cleanse. So lay it on me. I mean, there have been a lot of these over the years. Is there anything to the idea of cleansing?
Actually not. In our bodies, goodness gracious, we have these incredible filters. Lungs are a filter. Our kidneys are a filter. Our liver are filters. And they work very well at detoxifying us. There really aren't foods that detoxify. And what Deanna was speaking about, we see those over and over, and those are just, they really are just diet plans. That's, once again, telling a person what they need to do, not how to learn to take care of themselves. You know, you can't trust yourself, so buy this and you'll be all okay. And we need to go back to that internal wisdom. But the body detoxifies itself tremendously. I have very deep concerns about cleanses because you can cause some real severe GI type issues with those.
And I think anytime someone's trying to sell a product or say you need a specific product to support your weight loss, I think that should be a red flag for you. So when we're talking about any product, whether you know, whatever the name is. But also, I think an important thing to keep in mind is that supplements are supplements. That means they're in addition to a good diet. So we really need to get away from trying to use supplements or use products as our primary source of nutrition. Our nutrition should come from food, and it should taste good and fulfill us in lots of ways. And then if you're working with a health professional who thinks you need a supplement, then maybe that's a good guideline, but not from someone who doesn't have the health credentials.
Now, this hour, we haven't really talked about exercise because that is not your area of expertise. And we've done many Talk of Iowa's about exercise, and we will do more, of course. But when it comes to counting calories, obviously, there are a lot of tools available now that help us count calories, that help us count the calories we take in, that also help us count the calories that we burn. I mean, do you consider that to be a sensible approach?
This is Sue. I don't at all, because once again, we're questioning our own internal wisdom. Again, our tongue's not a calculator. It's not a scale. You know, what tastes good to me? What feels good? When I ate, how did my body feel after I ate it? And all of those external things coming in begin to have me believe I can't trust myself or don't know my own internal wisdom.
But if you have gotten to a point where you are significantly overweight and you need to change your diet, can't those tools be helpful in helping you retrain that tongue?
I don't think so, because once again, it's somebody saying, I know what's best for you. You don't know what's best for you. And if we look and engaging in health behaviors, you're still stigmatizing that person, putting them on a diet, saying your body doesn't know what to do. And our bodies know what to do. It takes coaching and it takes time. And we really work on what is hunger? What is fullness? What is this nudge? What is this nuance before I get starving, or that wonderful term, hangry? You know, what do I do? But to still say you count it, no, that goes against internal wisdom of the body. And you still stigmatize a person saying, "Top, you know what? You still don't know what's best for you." And we actually do. Just watch a little kitty. When they're done, they're done. You know, they'll stop halfway through. Great. We all have that, but we need to relearn it.
Anne, do you want to weigh in on that?
Yeah, you know, I agree completely. I think intuitive eating is very important of what your body tells you. But I also think some people need a starting point, need some tangibles. So some people do need those numbers. They need to have that ability to see, okay, I ate this amount of calories and I've had this amount of weight loss. So again, it's going back to that, having that rapport with your clients and talking to them about their needs and how they work. You know, I think an accountant might really like to know his numbers. And so it's very interesting to see those individual needs that a person might have. But that's, again, going back to really discussing what the core issues are and figuring out what that person really needs to be successful in having a healthy life. And so I never talk about calories. I never talk about foods, but I talk about how can we create a healthy eating plan that'll work for you, that can be sustainable for the rest of your life. So it has to be a rest of your life kind of a conversation. It's just not the immediate, what can I do in the next 6 months. It has to be a long-term longevity thing. So if it's numbers that works for them, I'm fine with that. But it has to be safe, and it has to be not obsessive, and it has to be it has to work for them personally.
And Joanne, let me ask you, I know that you've done a lot of research about where people get their nutritional information. And we did ask people yesterday, we don't have time to share their answers right now, but a lot of people said, I you know, learned from my parents. I learned in seventh grade health class. You know, where do we learn solid nutritional information?
Well, I think that those are two very different questions, where people are getting their information and where they get solid information. And I think we've covered some of the sources of solid information, looking for a registered dietitian, using or talking to a dietitian about what are good internet sites, because obviously we get a lot of our information now from the web, but we need to use reliable websites like eatright.org and some of those others. And speaking about reliable information, though, I just wanted to point out that oftentimes those numbers we get for calories burned from exercise machines, those are not reliable numbers. Almost every study I've seen, they overestimate how many calories we burn in exercise. So I think that skews people's view of exercise as well. So we have to be careful about those numbers. And some calorie trackers are not so accurate either. So, you know, kind of working and trusting our bodies and using a balance of tools.
Now, before we go, I want to talk about a couple of the major fads today that we do see. And I realize that there are many people who don't tolerate gluten, but gluten-free has gotten so popular, and it goes far beyond people who have celiac disease. Is that something that you have seen your clients doing a lot of, restricting their gluten intake? And Joanne, I see you nodding, so I'll go to you. And we only have a few minutes left.
I do see a lot of it. And actually, there are not a lot of people who need to go gluten-free or have celiac. It's still a very small percentage of the population. But unfortunately, in some classes at the university, students are assigned to read some of the books that promote gluten-free diets, so like the Wheat Belly or Grain Brain. I have students come in and say, well, we read this for class. And so that is really kind of unfortunate, because it makes students think they need to go gluten-free. Or again, you know, somebody they know has tried a gluten-free diet and they felt better, so that has become the solution for them. And unfortunately, for too many people, when they decide to go gluten-free, that means grain-free. So all they do is cut out the grains, and grains are such an important source of energy and nutrition for our body. So gluten-free, if you're choose to do that, it needs to be done in the right way, which unfortunately is expensive and oftentimes less healthy than eating gluten, as long as you do actually tolerate gluten.
Well, and it returns to that term we talked about earlier, orthorexia, where if you decide that this is the healthy eating that you want to follow, you can take it too far.
Right. And again, we do see, it's kind of like the diet du jour, or the book that's out there and who's most marketable on TV shows, but food restriction always leads to food interest. And we need to look at things that, you know, what Anne said, what is sustainable for a lifetime? And that goes back to that real internal wisdom. But people try it and then they decide that it's too expensive, it just doesn't work, and they go back to what it was. And that's why you see that continual roller coaster in and out of all the various types of diets that are out there.
And Anne, what are the buzzwords that you're hearing the most these days?
Gluten-free is the hugest one. And then paleo is ginormous. We've got tons of people that are on the paleo diet trying to find paleo products that we have in our stores. And then gluten-free. Everyone feels that if they have a tummy issue, they should be gluten-free. So just debusting those myths are very important when it comes to gluten-free, but then also helping those individuals following the paleo diet to navigate that they need to not eliminate food groups. So.
Well, and it must be a challenge for you working in a store where so many of these products that have gotten very popular and have those buzzwords on them.
Well, and I, you know, some of these products I haven't even heard of. And I really do try to eat these products, so I know what they taste like. And let me tell you, they are interesting. I am amazed by what people are putting together and selling on the store, because some of these products are not even, they don't even taste good. So again, it goes back to food needs to taste good. So definitely.
And be healthy.
Yes, and be healthy.
All right. Anne, thank you very much. Anne Cundiff is a registered dietitian at Hy-Vee in Des Moines. Sue Clarahan, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Sue Clarahan, registered dietitian in Iowa City with her own nutrition consulting practice. And Joanne Daler Miller, thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Joanne Daler Miller, University of Iowa student health and wellness dietitian. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Julia Davis, Claire Roth, Emily Woodbury, and Lindsay Moon. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. You can get in touch with us anytime. Talk of Iowa at iowapublicradio.org. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Talk of Iowa. Coming up on the show tomorrow, we'll talk about our relationships with our siblings and how they shape us.